question. You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. With your host, Ian the Dynamo Kelly. Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I will talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh socks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. This is Dynamo's Dozen. Okay, so welcome to Dynamo's Dozen once again. This week I have a very special guest, someone I've actually been looking forward to talking to for quite a while, and someone that's actually inspired me since I got into the world of media. I've got Finlay Martin joining me today for Dynamo's Dozen. For those of you that know that the name sounds familiar, Finlay was the lead writer, editor and publisher of Power Slam, the wrestling magazine. Which a lot of us old school fans will know well, was our source of wrestling information over here in Ireland and in the UK. And since then, Finlay has written three e-books on the subject of pro wrestling, and they're all kind of in the vein of pro wrestling through the Power Slam years, which Finlay will explain a little bit more about and how you can go about finding that content. Also, he runs the Power Slam podcast with co-host Kenny McIntosh. And in addition, he regularly writes columns, reviews and interviews for Inside the Ropes, which a lot of you will be familiar with, and is a regular contributor to Wrestle Talk magazine as well. So welcome to the show, Finlay. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very, very much for having me. You know, now you've listed all the things I do, I'm surprised I've even got time to appear on this podcast.
Yeah, it's a strange one. You're a busy man, very busy man.
Not as busy as I used to be when I was running Power Slam magazine from 1994 through to 2014. Not as busy as that. But I mean, when you get to my age, you know, you want to slow it down just a little bit. Not too much. You know, I mean, you want to continue doing stuff. And let's face it, you know, just keeping up with wrestling itself is, it's not a full-time job, but it takes up a lot of one's time each week, as I'm sure you would agree.
For sure, for sure. I mean, it's the same. I mean, running this podcast on a weekly basis is also, it is time-consuming through doing your research, through, I guess, you know, all the little bits and pieces. Also, finding content that people will listen to, finding guests that people will enjoy listening to. So it is definitely a time-consuming thing, but
we enjoy immensely, right?
Exactly. Listen, what's the old saying? If you enjoy what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life.
Never work a day in your life. I mean, I've yet to work a day in my life, and I'm 49.
Well, there you go. And a spiffy 49-year-old, I might add. There you go.
Thank you very much.
So, Finlay, I guess if you want to just to start, maybe elaborate on some of the introduction that I gave you there in terms of what you are doing. I know last night you had a high-profile show over in Wolverhampton, possibly, with Goldust, with Inside the Ropes.
When I'm going to see the one tomorrow night in Manchester, which I'm based in Lancaster, Lancashire.
Sure.
So that's only like 50 miles down the train tracks. So it's very convenient to get to. So no, I'll be going to that. No, I'm just going along as a fan. I'll see Kenny there and the rest of his team and things like that. But I don't participate in the live shows.
Sure.
I just do the podcasts, and I do contribute some written pieces as well for the Inside the Ropes Patreon section. Like, do you remember what's going down in Power Slam? I'm sure you remember that.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So I do like a monthly version of that, which is in the vein of the way it was in Power Slam magazine, which is actually the stuff that we don't talk about on the podcast. So that's funny because we talk about so much on the podcast and it's like all the other things that you didn't get to. I do that as like a written thing each month and do various other things as well for the Inside the Ropes Patreon section. Right, for Wrestle Talk Magazine, issue 8 is out now. If you haven't seen that, I obviously have a vested interest in this, of course, but I obviously urge you to check that out. James Dixon does like a really good job running that. So I'm very proud of it. I was really touched that they asked me to write for that magazine back in 2017. So I've contributed to all the issues and long may that continue. Sure. And as you said, yeah, I've got three books out. Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam Years, Power Slam Interviews Volume 1, Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. They're all available from Amazon, iBooks and Kobo. So you can check them out, read the reviews. Again, all in the sort of vein of Power Slam. Very in-depth. The first one is like a history of the wrestling really from 92 through to 2015 and like a history of the magazine as well. And the Power Slam Interviews Volume 1 is like a compilation of like some of the greatest interviews that we published along with huge new intros, like an in-depth analysis of the interviewees and how they were to interview at the time. Same goes with Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. And both of the interviews books come with brand new in-depth interviews that were recorded especially for those books. So, yeah, I hope you will find those of some interest. So that's about where I'm up to. Oh. That's the plugs over with.
That's the plugs over with. We get into the meaty stuff. No, I mean, I'm interested to, as we spoke about it kind of in-depth last week, I'm interested in going and looking at all of that. But we will kind of touch on that again before the end of the show. I guess best place to start would be, I mean, at the moment you are currently, you would still do quite a lot of research and have a knowledge of what is going on in the current product in the States. So I guess WWE is always the place we will start with.
Yes, I haven't watched last night's Raw yet, I must confess, but I'm nearly completely up to date on Impact Wrestling, which probably no one will be interested in listening to us talk about.
Absolutely. Hence why they didn't make the list. No offense to the guys and girls working at Impact Wrestling, but it just kind of lost my interest.
I mean, there's so much product out there that you've got to choose, haven't you? I mean, it's the same with like general TV. If you've got Netflix or Amazon Prime or Sky or everything, I mean, you can't watch everything. And the same applies to pro wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, two of the things that stood out for me, I suppose, over the last couple of weeks was two new hires in the backstage scene. One being Bruce Pritchard, which has obviously made a lot of kind of headlines and whatnot. And I guess Bruce has kind of firmly put himself back in the spotlight with the success of the podcast, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. And it looks like WWE have called him in. I know you have a fairly good theory on that, which we spoke about last week. So what do you make of that hire, and where do you think, I guess, that that signing goes?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think last year, wasn't it, when he entered into an agreement, Bruce did, with WWE.
Sure.
So there was because remember when he turned up in Impact, that was really weird. Were you watching Impact a couple of years ago when he turned up there?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just very strange, and it seemed so fleeting, his involvement with that company.
Yeah.
And then he was gone. He's like, well, what was the point of that? So he's doing his podcast, and from what I understand, he was doing very well out of that podcast. That's what people say. So I think WWE were thinking, well, this guy's getting a lot of traffic. You know, we have previously dealt with him, you know, worked with him dating back to, I believe it was 87 when he first went to WWF. So they've had a relationship dating back over 30 years. And it was just like, when they entered into an agreement last year, I did feel like something like this could happen. Bruce and his partner is Conrad, isn't it? That was his partner, or was his partner, no longer.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a big part of the StarCast, weren't they?
Has the show stopped, or?
I'm not sure. I mean, is it still going on?
Well, they did one on Friday revolving Jerry Lawler. So I haven't listened to the whole show yet, so I'm not sure if there was an announcement at the end, but they did kind of hint at it at the start. So I'm not sure whether there maybe might be a couple of shows kind of in the can that they might release anyway. But I do know the Starcast is Conrad's baby. He's actually been on my show before. And hopefully again, but that is Starcast is Conrad's baby. So I guess WWE has obligations to WWE. I mean, it's not going to be the same type of show if he's working for the company, you know?
Well, it's hard to imagine how, I mean, cause let's face it, when you're working for the creative team, it's pretty full on, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And like, he's going to be privy to all sorts of information that they're not going to want him blurting out on a podcast. I mean, I'm not saying he would say that, but he might do. And would they want him doing a podcast, and how independent would it be if he's a member of the creative team? It's hard for me to believe that that podcast will continue. Maybe it will do. But even if he does, as you just said, it's not going to be in the same format that made it such a success, surely.
Yeah, I mean, it would be very, very WWE edited, I'm sure.
So I'm not sure how all that's going to play out. I mean, let's give them, you know, let's not cast any aspersions. Just let's not just make, you know, let's not start predicting what's going to happen. But it's hard for me to believe that it can continue, because his priority right now has to be the WWE creative team. Vince would have insisted on that, and that's absolutely the way it should have been. If you're going back there and working alongside Vince, he needs to know that you're on Team Vince, not only partly on Team Vince. You've got to be all in, pardon the pun. got to be.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, in terms of, I guess that kind of is a good segue into his current role. Like, having been someone, I guess, around through all of Pritchard's work previously to when he left, to other companies and whatnot, what do you think, what can you foresee, I guess, or envision his role? Well, we know his role, but I guess his work within the company will be now. Can you see anything in particular that may change, or have you started to see things that have already changed? Or,
well, a lot of people were talking last week about the, you know, the big Batista angle at the end. Just felt very different, didn't it?
It did.
It felt like something like a shift. It felt like a creative shift in WWE. So a lot of people were thinking, well, is this a coincidence?
Yeah.
You know, that this happened right after Bruce Pritchard was rehired. And who knows? Because we know it's a team effort in there, isn't it?
They're called
creative, it's a collaborative process. So, I mean, everybody's presumably or theoretically working together towards one common goal. That's not always the way it plays out, but that's how it's supposed to work.
On paper,
On paper, exactly. So, I mean, who knows whether it was Bruce Pritchard who came up with that or not. I'm sure he did contribute to it. Maybe they had this planned out well in advance. I mean, you go back to SmackDown 1000, it was fairly obvious with the Evolution segment that Batista and Triple H were setting something up there. And we know that Batista has wanted this match with Triple H at WrestleMania for at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, he's been talking about publicly for about that long. So, I mean, I'm not sure really what's going to change in terms of Bruce's involvement. He's obviously got lots of experience as a booker, creative team member, so he can bring a hell of a lot to the company. And the fact that he's been away and has seen a lot of different things and he's listened to people, I think that's very important, because when you're in that WWE system, you're not really listening to outside forces. It's very much, this is the way it is. We all need to sort of think the same way. If you've been independent for a long time, I think that could be quite beneficial in some way. I mean, certainly wouldn't be if you're younger, but Bruce is hardly going to be idealistic, is he, about what he can and can't change or achieve in WWE. He's going to know what he can and can't get away with, because he's worked alongside Vince, or previously worked alongside Vince, for many, many years. So he's going to know what he can and can't say, and how far he can and can't push his ideas to get them through and to get them accepted and to get them implemented.
Yeah.
So I think it is tricky, really, to sort of say what's going to change here, because we know this is still Vince's, this is still Vince's baby. He's still very much in control. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But as somebody who works under Vince, I think he can have far greater input and far greater impact than others who wouldn't have the respect that Bruce has. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I mean, Bruce is somebody that I guess has been away from the company in a creative role for quite a long time, but having, I guess, revisited, you know, all of the previous work that he's done in depth, I guess, on the podcast that he does with Conrad, it's probably given him a kind of a fresh lease of life and also some fresh ideas to bring to the company. He is a wrestling guy. He's not one of these kind of cowboys that they hire in the background that has, you know, a degree in writing that may have worked on a C-list, you know, American fucking shitty TV show that they brought in. Like, he's not Freddie Prinze Jr.
No.
So, I mean, well,
how does he stack up against Dana Warrior?
Well, it was actually funny enough, that was the next announcement that we had kind of made, because I did mention two new employees.
I'm sorry. I threw you off there. Back to Bruce Pritchard.
Well, no, we will get to Dana Warrior. But Bruce Pritchard is a wrestling guy first and foremost. He's kind of been around the business, grew up in the business in terms of getting his education from the right guys. So it can only be a good thing if he is allowed, and if he did have a hand in something as small, say, as how they ended. Because I can't imagine Bruce Pritchard having something small, even a small little thing like finishing the show with Batista carrying out Ric Flair was very old school, and to end the show in that way I thought was a struggle. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing WWE has been missing, whereas you watch something at the end of the show and it means you must tune in next week to see what happens.
Exactly. You know? I mean, you go back and look at, I mean, a lot. Each week for Inside the Ropes, we review 20-year-old episode of Sunday Night Heat. Sure. Now, Sunday Night Heat from that era is not a wrestling show.
No.
You're not watching it for the wrestling. But the story, sometimes some of it is completely out there. I mean, this is Vince Russo in full effect. But I mean, the stuff that happens at times is like, wow, you know, that was engaging. Sometimes in for all the wrong reasons. But it's the sort of thing where you just cannot turn it off. And the cliffhangers and the storytelling, it's joined up booking as well, because it's a huge part of Raw. You know, you watch Sunday Night Heat, you've got to watch Raw. And I think if you watch Raw, wow, I've got to watch Sunday Night Heat, because it's all connected.
Yeah.
So, I mean, definitely that old school sort of booking, even though Vince Russo would never describe himself as a booker, but because he was submitting something that Vince McMahon would then change so that it worked in a old school, even though it's Attitude Era, but still a lot of old school elements there in terms of storylines and structured booking. It did work very well. And you're right, that's what WWE needs right now. It needs long-term stories. I mean, for how long now have they failed to do the follow-up? For how long now have they just not really come up with long-term storylines that have really grabbed you? I don't know. I can't even tell you the last time I saw a long-term storyline in that company that I thought was full on, you know, absolutely, you know, balls to the wall, you know, all guns blazing, that company firing on all cylinders. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw anything like that. I mean, they do really good matches, but the storylines so often let that product down.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I've given Vince Russo a hard time on this show just with some of his opinions on the current talent, like the likes of, you know, Finn and Becky, and sometimes I'm a little bit biased when he kind of throws pops at those guys. But I mean, for anybody out there, it is worth noting, and I don't mind, because I've actually talked to Russo and kind of, you know, tried to get him on the show before, and then I've kind of gone back and listened to some of his podcasts. He actually has a really good podcast now with Matt Coon called Truth with Consequences.
Right.
Similar, I suppose, in the vein to Conrad and Bruce, but it's basically Matt Coon putting Vince Russo under the radar on a lot of the stuff that he's claimed he did and whatnot. But, I mean, he definitely does get probably more flack sometimes than he actually should. I'm not a Russo sympathizer, but at the same time, you know, the guy did, you know, do quite a lot also. So, I mean, you got to be fair in the Russo discussion, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you are. I think in terms of 97 to 99 WWF, I think he was an integral part of the success of that promotion then. Yeah. I mean, it was when he joined WCW that it went completely to hell.
Yes.
And you look at what he did for TNA Stroke Impact Wrestling. Well, you know, most of that, I would say, was detrimental to the company. Certainly the WCW stuff was, you know, almost brings a tear in my eye, you know,
yes,
thinking about it.
It does, it does.
WWF, he was a big part of the success of that company. I know a lot of people in WWE now have tried to downplay what he contributed, yeah, but I think it's a huge part of that company's success.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually went, since listening to those shows, what I actually did was I went, because I actually went back and watched Nitro all the way from 95, I think up until about 98. It was just as Brett came into the company. And took a break for a while. But what I've actually done now is skipped ahead to when Russo first came in. And it's funny enough, when you watch that first kind of first couple of Nitros, and then when they go into Halloween Havoc, I think it was of 99, if I'm correct.
Yeah, yeah, in Vegas. Yeah, I was there live.
Yeah. I actually thought initially he was doing a fairly decent job. He was trying to create some storylines.
Yeah.
I thought they really done a good job of making Sid, you know, getting Sid over big time. Same with Goldberg. They also start giving Brett some proper storyline and airtime and got some steam under Brett's heels. So, I mean, if you ask me who was a better story writer in terms of having, you know, an actual structure on a weekly basis, Russo beats Bischoff in that regard every single time. For me, purely because as a TV show, at least there was, whether it was good or not, there was an attempt to have a structure rather than just calling guys in on a weekly basis and then saying, oh, we've got nothing for you this week. You know?
Well, I mean, it very quickly fell apart for him in WCW.
Yes.
But those first couple of weeks, yeah, it was without a doubt. Yeah, there was. I remember. I went over to Vegas, watched Halloween Havoc '99 at the MGM Grand Garden Arena.
Awesome.
And I did the review in the magazine, and I called it "Going Places" because it felt like WCW was going somewhere
at last. Yeah.
Terrible sort of 7 months, really. February 99 was when it really when the wheels came off.
Yeah.
And it was really February through to October when Russo and Ed Ferrara came in, and it did seem for a few weeks like WCW would be saved. Sadly not.
Well, Ed Ferrara was probably the fucking poison chalice, but sure, look, we won't talk about him. He's really got no place on any podcast or talk, you know. By all accounts, it sounds like Ed Ferrara even sold Eric Bischoff down the river too. So it's just a funny story, I guess, in a lot of ways. But I guess we kind of going back to
the Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah,
but
it is an interesting story. But then they followed it up by the announcement that Dana Warrior is going to be in the team, and Dana Warrior has actually written a transcript, if I can be so bold as to read it out.
Please do.
So this is, quote, "When Warrior died, I never sat down. I never laid in bed. I worked every day from the day we stepped back to New Mexico soil to provide for my children. There were many ways to do this, but my self-professed identifier from decades past burst forth." Okay, this is Warrior talking. "I sought my core, I unearthed my dream, I put back on my riding hat. At the start I did it to keep in touch with all you warriors, to assure each one we'd be okay. I started to get feedback from readers looking for assurances they would be okay. You warriors felt connected to the universal team of challenges posed, lessons learned, mountains scaled with life and death consequence without luxury." So there's a lot of jibber jabber here. "I began to understand my warrior tribe was not only behind me in support, but also behind me in expecting that I lead. I was humbled in a physical way. I literally sunk to my knees in tears. So honored by your faith. Blah, blah, blah. I was scared. So I'm just going to skip a lot of this.
Please do.
Yeah, some exciting opportunities are before me now. They make me laugh and cry with excitement. Stand to full height with purpose. Blah, blah, blah. Whenever you ask if you can do a job, tell them, certainly I can, then get busy and find out how to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, warriors and warrior women, fear of failure is the most toxic belief pattern looping through the human psyche. You're not too old. She finishes after a long, long-winded thing. I believe the universe honors warriors who feel the fear but fight for the power of one's ultimate dream always. So, didn't mention one thing that she's going to do within the company, but yeah, there was a lot of kind of, I guess, Jim Helwig, rest in peace, coming through, Dana Warrior there.
Yeah.
And that's not meant with any disrespect. It's just very, very long-winded.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. That's the way he, that was the way Helwig, Ultimate Warrior, that was how he wrote on his website.
Yeah.
He wrote things like that, didn't he?
He did.
You're like, you know, is he trying to blind us here with science? Is he trying to bamboozle us?
Yeah.
You know, with this enormous vocabulary. And it's just like, well, what exactly are you saying there?
I think he just got a dictionary and just kind of picked words and tried to put them into sentences more than likely.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we can all use a thesaurus and
come
across articular, but it's like, what does it all mean? And this is pro wrestling here. You know, it's all about connecting with the audience and coming up with something that grabs them.
Well, look, the Warrior definitely done that. And I mean, for the Warrior to be able to go the way he did and kind of make peace with everyone is really kind of cool and, I guess, inspiring. But what we, you know, for me, Dana Warrior, I don't know what she can bring to a creative team. I mean, I can't shoot her down either because I don't know what her credentials are.
No.
In that. I mean, it couldn't be a PR move, could it?
No, of course not. How dare you?
Yeah, like, I mean, would I be so bold to think something like that? I mean, I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah.
It is strange. I mean,
it seems like something that's just designed to get people writing about WWE, and it's an easy story to write.
Sure.
Lots of people will write that story because it gives them the opportunity to write about their childhood hero, the Ultimate Warrior, if the Warrior was indeed their childhood hero. I mean, let's face it, was a fascinating character.
Oh, sure.
You know, the thing about the Warrior you just mentioned there, it was really good that the Warrior was able to come back and make peace with Vince. I mean, I'm not sure if he ever really did make peace with Hogan or not, but certainly with the company anyway.
Yeah.
After their final big split in 96, I believe it was. But the reason we liked that was because, we were uplifted to see that as a longtime fan like myself or aware of what had happened between Warrior and WWF, WWE.
Sure.
It's because of the history between them. So it was like seeing Bruno bury the hatchet when he went into the Hall of Fame in MSG. And to me, that was just one of the most amazing moments ever. Seeing Bruno and Vince on stage together, to me, the most amazing thing I've ever seen in all the time I've been watching pro wrestling, because I thought that would never happen.
Even more so than Brett making up with Vince and Shawn, yeah?
No, the Brett thing was far more predictable.
Sure.
Because Brett was somebody who missed the spotlight and he needed it.
Yeah.
I didn't think Bruno really did.
No, you're correct. I'd agree.
I don't think he ever needed the money, but it was a really nice thing for it to happen. And I believe it was Triple H, Paul Levesque, who made that happen.
Yeah.
You know, if this wrestling thing doesn't work out, there's a job in the UN waiting for him.
Oh, and, yeah. And he's a good politician, I bet.
Absolutely. So to me, you know, knowing what had happened between Vince McMahon Jr., of course, not Vince Sr., Vince McMahon Jr. and Bruno and their big split in 87, I believe it was, and just how unpleasant it was during the sex and steroid scandals of 91, 92, and just the bile between them, the enmity between them that was still really raw as late as like 2008, I think it was, 2007, 2008. Things were still really bad between them. We did a huge interview with Bruno in very early 2009, and still the war was as intense as ever between Bruno and Vince. And it was quite astonishing that like 4 years later, they'd managed to, you know, an olive branch was extended and accepted. They smoked the peace pipe and they put it back together. And I thought that was just a really nice thing to see. I think for the fans, for Bruno, for Vince, for WWE, for everyone. And same with Warrior, with them putting that back together in, I guess it would have been 2013, the reconciliation occurred, because it happened through the video game, didn't it? When it he did that crazy video game commercial. Do you remember that one?
I do indeed, yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, it was, would have been 2K, were they were on the 2Ks then, weren't they? 2K
went to the, yeah, they did.
So that would, I think they basically spearheaded it, and then a deal was put back together, and Warrior made that appearance, Hall of Fame ceremony, and sadly died. Was it the, it was the Hall of Fame would have been the Saturday, and I think he died on the Tuesday, didn't he?
Because it was the night after Raw. Yeah, yeah, you're correct. It was shortly after Raw, which was so strange. Yeah.
I mean, I thought Warrior's Hall of Fame speech was one of the greatest Hall of Fame speeches I've ever heard. I don't know whether it'll ever be topped. And the thing I liked about it so much was it just felt so real.
Yeah.
It just felt like there was, he was being totally honest out there. And just little things like him saying, well, for all you stars who are on top now, your time will come when it will be over and you'll have to do something else. And I think the camera flicked to like Dolph Ziggler and Roman Reigns. And you're like, there's the guy, there's the voice of experience talking about, you know, there is life after wrestling. And just all these other things he was talking about, like just little things like what he was always railed for in the press was for blowing up in his matches. And he was talking about that. He was talking about blowing up in his matches during his speech.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was tremendous. But the reason that speech was so good was for all the reasons we just talked about, but because he was a wrestler who we all remember. I mean, Diana Warrior, I don't really know much about her other than she was married to Jim Hellwig and they got two daughters.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she's done some really good charity work. I can't really comment on whether she's a good person, she's a bad person.
Yeah.
I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say she's a good person. Does that mean that she's qualified to be a member of the creative team? No, really. It doesn't. I know lots of good people in my normal life, and none of them are qualified to work on the WWE creative team.
That's it, dude. I mean, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, yourself and myself would be more qualified to work than some of the guys that they have, and we wouldn't even be qualified, you know? So it's...
Yeah.
Look, I mean, I wish her well, for sure. Yeah. Definitely wish her well, and she does do a lot of great charity work. Just a strange one is all. I guess...
Maybe she's just going to still really be more of an ambassador type thing.
Possible.
She's, you know, a really good role for her, and she obviously enjoys it, and everyone's a winner. And maybe she'll have some interact. Maybe she'll contribute something, maybe she won't. It does feel like a figurehead, you know, PR type story as much as an actual somebody being hired to do a, you know, an actual hands-on job where she's doing the writing each week. I'm sure she maybe will be involved on some level. But I don't really think a whole lot has changed. And
well,
she'll
look, maybe
still
it's the whole woman's movement now as well. It could be a thing that she is good to the girls and stuff like that. She could be kind of an inspiration in some kind of way, shape or form in that sense. So, I mean, I definitely wish her well.
Of course. Yeah, let's give her a chance. You know, maybe she will end up being successful.
Definitely.
And if she is, we'll be the, you know, I'll be the first to admit that I don't think I really knocked her that much.
No.
But I mean, let's just give her a chance to succeed or fail on her own merits.
Oh, no, I definitely, I don't think either of us knocked her. I'll definitely kind of knock her speech, but that was just because it was so long-winded and I couldn't understand it, but that's allowed.
Yeah.
So I guess before we get on to the kind of the new upstart company that maybe people may have heard of, there's a couple of little bits, I guess, standouts. One of the big kind of stories, I guess the biggest story at the moment, I do know on Inside the Ropes recently, Heyman talked about frustrations with Dean Ambrose's attitude and stuff like that, which was kind of cool just to read what Paul was saying. And a lot of it sounds kind of true, and it kind of sounds, you know, it's almost kind of reverberating back from what Steve Austin said when he appeared on his podcast too.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, for anyone that doesn't know, Dean Ambrose kind of was throwing sly digs at Brock Lesnar. Well, not even sly digs, to be honest. Just digs at Brock Lesnar, saying that he was lazy and whatnot. And Heyman kind of being the loyal kind of guy that he is in some way, shape or form, if you can use loyal with Paul Heyman. But he definitely came out swinging, kind of in defense of his on-air client, Brock Lesnar. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, Heyman has obviously, you know, he's been associated with Brock Lesnar since 2002, yep, when he was officially brought up. Was it the night after WrestleMania 18, I believe?
Yes, good memory.
So, I mean, yeah, and they did have an association when Heyman was, you know, when Heyman, I think, had made an impression on Lesnar when Lesnar was in OVW. So I think possibly Heyman saw that this guy was going to be a huge star, wanted to be involved with him. That's something Heyman's always done, dating back to the very beginning of his career. He's tried really to befriend and assist at the same time people who he feels are going to be big stars, partly to benefit them, and partly, and you may say, Finlay, you cynic, partly to benefit himself as well.
Sure, yeah.
He had that you know, relationship with Lesnar. He was somebody that was probably Lesnar's closest confidant when Lesnar left in 2004,
yeah,
and they maintained that relationship all the way through Lesnar's UFC career, all the way back to Lesnar returning in 2012.
Sure.
I mean, that was when Heyman returned. Obviously, Heyman had left WWE on bad terms after the December to Dismember pay-per-view, which was right at the end of 2006, wasn't it? December 2006.
Yes.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they maintained their relationship. I mean, like Heyman would, when it was fight week, Heyman would be with Lesnar in Vegas or whatever when Lesnar was fighting for UFC. So it was not really surprising, given this, the length of the business relationship and the friendship between them. I mean, Heyman was involved in the was he called Death Clutch, the Brock Lesnar autobiography. I think Heyman was heavily involved in that as well.
Okay.
Right. So I did an interview with Heyman, I think, in 2010, and we talked a little bit about that. So he was involved in the book as well. I mean, he's been involved in a lot of things that Lesnar has done. So it's entirely consistent consistent with everything that's happened previously, that Heyman would back Lesnar against Dean Ambrose. So, of course he's going to back Lesnar because they are pals.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Jim Ross said in an interview I did with him last year that he believed that Heyman was heavily involved in the match layout process of the whole Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg program.
Okay.
He was saying that Heyman was involved in that. So I think Heyman, even though he's not an official member of the creative team, I think they do respect his ideas, and I think they do allow him some type of input. We know Lesnar respects Heyman's ideas, and Lesnar will always ask Heyman for his advice on what's best for his career. So WWE is aware of that. So they try and keep Heyman and Lesnar on side because Lesnar is, I guess you could say, their biggest star. I believe he's their most highly paid star.
Well,
I think Vince I think Vince views him as the company's biggest star, even though he's not a full-timer. I think that's the way Vince views him. So Heyman's a very big part of that whole package. So Heyman's always going to bat Lesnar.
Yeah.
Absolutely, he's going to bat Lesnar. And I think loyalty is a word you can use in this situation, under these circumstances. I think Heyman is tremendously loyal to Lesnar.
Me too. Yeah,
because of the depth of the relationship and the friendship as well between them.
Sure. I mean, I agree with all of that. And talking about big stars, I guess this will be the kind of last on what's going on in the current WWE universe, as they like to say. Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey, it seems to be that in terms of social media, they are definitely turning up the heat quite a little bit, especially over the weekend. Did you get to see any of the back and forth?
Well, they were some of the tweets where they were using language that you wouldn't hear on WWE program. Is that what you're programming? That's what you're referring to, isn't it?
That's correct.
Including the picture of Lynch holding the Fujiwara armbar in the locker room, that one, and I can't remember what the exact wording was, but it was not language you would hear on Raw or SmackDown.
She was insinuating that Ronda Rousey's other half was in fact a dick. Yeah, it was quite a witty response from Becky. To be fair,
This has been going back to the initial angle prior to Survivor Series, hasn't it? Where there's been this sort of, I guess you could almost call it like wrestling banter between them on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it was very good. I mean, a lot of people have kind of fallen for it because of the fact that, you know, Ronda did respond saying, look, I think she called her by her real name. She said, look, Rebecca Quinn, fuck the storyline. The next time I see you, I'm beating you up for real. Because she tried to make it look that. So, I mean, for anybody that got worked by Ronda, you really don't have a right then to go out and say that she's not respecting the business, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, when you think about it, this is the way, I mean, all those times, I mean, Rip Rogers is the one who's famous.
Oh, he's the man, yeah.
For being critical of this, and he's right on the money.
Yeah.
And you'll have two guys, you'll have a match on this show, and then they'll congratulate each other on Twitter. Great match, you know, oh, terrific performance, you know, love to work with you again, bro, and all this other type of stuff. And it's like, okay, this is the post-kayfabe era.
Jericho was actually really guilty of it for a man that has constantly banged on about, you know, wrestling, you know, and old school. I mean, a couple of days later, after the Kenny Omega fight, the two of them are on a podcast together, drinking beers. And so, you know what I mean? You got to commend these two girls on really kind of working people once again. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant as well. And I think we should see more of this because it's their job to promote this match. You can see their goal is to persuade, if he isn't already convinced, Vince McMahon to book this match on last in the main event, last match slot at WrestleMania. So this banter or this discourse or this back and forth or this argy-bargy or whatever you want to call it is all designed for that purpose, to make Vince believe that this match has to go on last at WrestleMania. And if they're there saying, oh, you know, great performance last night on Raw, oh, we really had them, we had the fans in the palm of our hand, how does that really achieve that? And by going in this different direction, which is like you can say, well, it's not 1982, kayfabe's dead, the fact they're doing this, and I think people realise it's fun as well. Everyone's in on the joke here, aren't they? Let's face it. And that's what makes it even funnier. The fact that they're doing this to promote their match, I think good on them.
Me too.
And this is what this should really serve as an example to others for them to emulate so they can promote their matches so people really get into them as well. Because that's what this Twitter exchanges between them has done, has made us more eager to see this match, I think. Would you agree?
I 100% agree. I mean, for me, if you kind of take yourself out of the fact that, you know, we all know it's a work, we don't need to be told it's a work. However, the way they are kind of building this match and the way the girls are kind of working it, especially Becky at the moment, they're giving you the idea that this is a big fight. And it's really brought a big fight feel to an angle for the first time in a long time, I kind of feel anyway. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, 100%. It has that big. I mean, the last time I had a big fight feel, without even knowing the backstory, was actually the NWA heavyweight title match between Nick Aldis and Cody Rhodes. So, you know, it's still there for guys and girls if they want it in terms of creating that kind of big fight feel and creating interest without even necessarily having to do a whole lot, you know?
That's right. And the thing is as well, people each week can't wait to see the latest development in the Ronda versus Becky storyline on screen. And then you've got like people who can't wait to read the tweets from Becky to Ronda and vice versa, that are all about promoting this match and promoting this storyline.
Yeah,
so it's added another dimension to the feud because you've got this Twitter element of it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if they can tone the language down a bit, and I imagine they will do, although if they haven't been told to already, then they will be told to, we will have been told to tone it down very soon. They haven't already, it's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
And they can start incorporating the tweets into the storylines. They can start putting the tweets. I haven't seen last night's Raw yet, so I have no idea whether they did it on last night's Raw.
Me neither, yeah.
Right, so, I mean, when you think about it, they should be using the tweets on Raw, shouldn't they? To really hype up this match and that this is real and this has gone beyond normal pro wrestling. And, you know, these two really genuinely dislike each other. You know, this isn't, you know, worked pro wrestling. This is where we've blurred the line here between fantasy and reality and what's real and what's not. And that, to me, is what's always been appealing about pro wrestling. It, you know, what are parts of it real?
Yeah.
I mean, like, go back and look at Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in 1997.
Yeah.
We knew those two really disliked each other. I mean, there's no Twitter or social media around back then, and the internet was still really in its infancy in terms of websites and what have you. But we knew that these two did not like each other, and watching the interplay between them each week on Raw, you'd be like, well, was that supposed to happen or was it not supposed to happen? And I think those are the best type of feuds where we don't really know what's real. I mean, it seems to me that Ronda and Becky are working together harmoniously, and this is all a work.
If they
can take it a little bit deeper and really convince us that maybe it's they're not working together and they really genuinely do dislike each other, that's when it takes it to a new plateau to me. And that's, they to me are the greatest wrestling feuds, and that's what we should all want from this.
I agree. I guess with the few minutes that we have left, we should definitely kind of talk about AEW, what the impact of AEW may have gone on WWE going forward, and the impact that it is possibly having on WWE now. Finn, you've been around the block many a time, and you've seen many wrestling companies, you know, come up, and you've seen the different kind of, I guess, their different models, their business models, and their agendas. What, I guess, break it down from your perspective with AEW at the moment and what you think the future will hold, I guess, in the next year.
Well, I'm glad we've come back to that, because I think we were talking earlier about Bruce Pritchard and the StarCast and everything, and you know what it's like on podcasts. You think I'm going to say this next, and then the conversation takes a different direction, and you're like, damn, I really wish I'd mentioned that. We mentioned earlier about Bruce Pritchard. Why has he been signed by WWE? The whole StarCast thing, he was heavily involved in that, as we know.
Yep.
As we know, there's going to be another convention in conjunction with Double or Nothing. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah.
So WWE will be like, right, do we really want Bruce involved in this? And worse, do we want Bruce involved in the creative of All Elite Wrestling? That is the other reason why he was signed. Didn't get to mention that earlier, and I'm really pleased that I was able to bring that up and mention that.
Oh, I had your back. I've always got your back, Finn. Don't worry.
But it's right. I mean, and you just said what's going on with AEW? How is this going to change wrestling? You know, I mean, this is big. And the fact that WWE is making these moves, I mean, I know Jerry Lawler mentioned, I think it was just a couple of months ago, that he had signed a new contract with WWE. And I think he mentioned that he'd received a pay rise. And you're like, the reason they've signed him is because they don't want him going to AEW.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part of the reason why Bruce was signed, because how many more weeks or months would have passed before AEW offered him a gig working for them? We know AEW's got a lot of money to spend. They're backed by people with deep pockets.
Yeah.
What do we know about this TV deal? Do you know anything about this TV deal? No one's really talking about this TV deal. Or are they talking about this TV deal?
No, I mean, I've only heard little snippets. There's been a couple of people that say they're sources to me and say that there is possible, there is negotiations with TBS, which is ironic, which seems to be fairly concrete offers. And there's a couple of other murmurings, but to be honest with you, I don't really want to speculate on it because I don't know, but it definitely does seem that there is kind of going to be a big TV deal, and it looks like it's already in the works, so.
Yeah. I mean, I've been told by a couple of people who they're negotiating with, but I've kind of been told not to say anything.
Yeah, same,
And everybody seems to be in that position right now. And I think it would be unwise to really mention the TV names of the TV channels that they're in negotiations with, because when they're ready, they'll announce it.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I mentioned TBS is just purely because a few people have actually asked me, like, is it TBS? And I just mentioned that it has been spoken about, but I mean, you know, I can't really go into it because I don't know enough, you know.
Well, I think once it's signed and once it's official, then the word will be out. I mean, I know they're kind of drip feeding information about All Elite Wrestling because they don't have a TV program yet, and they've got to keep the promotion in the news. You know, there needs to be constantly things happening so people are talking about them, which is, you know, just good promotion, isn't it? I mean,
for sure.
It's all right, Twitter and being elite and all these other things, but if these guys aren't wrestling and they're not really doing a lot and won't be for over 2 months, you've got to just release that information slowly and steadily.
Drip feed, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, we know they've got a lot of money behind them. Apparently there's a big TV deal in the works. So I think it's, I mean, if what I'm told happens, it's going to be big.
Yeah,
it's going to be huge. The fact that Kenny Omega has signed with AEW and turned down a hefty offer from WWE really tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's at that point in his career right now where that did seem like a good move for him, going and working for Vince McMahon.
Yeah, it seemed like the only move, yeah.
Yeah, and then this happened, AEW happened. It's like, well, no, he's sticking with his pals. I mean, I don't know whether it's the right move for his career, to be honest with you. I mean, for somebody who's so driven and somebody who wants to be the best, obviously, I mean, a guy who Chris nicknamed himself the best bout machine, to me, I kind of thought, well, is he going to give WWE a shot? Because he's never going to really know how good he is or how good he could have been and how famous he could have been unless he signed with WWE.
Yeah.
Now, I think AEW is going to do, I think it's going to do, it's going to be big, but we don't know how big it's going to be. And I think even the most optimistic member of, you know, the AEW fan club doesn't believe it can ever be as big as WWE.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know whether Kenny made the right move there, but that was his decision to make. I understand why he's made it. Maybe he feels that he's a lot safer in All Elite Wrestling than he would have been in WWE.
Sure.
And I think that's undeniable because we've seen a lot of people enter that WWE system with a hell of a lot of talent who've been chewed up and spat out.
Yep.
So maybe he thought, well, this is the right move for me financially and creatively as well, because I know I'm going to be looked after and I know I'm going to be one of the top 5 stars or even top 3 or even 2 stars in this company. But I think it's going to be big. I think when Double or Nothing happens, that's May. What date's that? Is it May 24th, I believe it is?
I think it's May 24th or May 25th, yeah.
Yeah. When that happens, I think they're gonna. I think a lot of things are going to be announced either just before or just after that. And obviously, they're signing all this talent. They're apparently paying them huge money. Now, the money has got to come from somewhere to cover these contracts, hasn't it?
Yeah. You
know, I mean, you know, it's okay having billionaire owners, but people become billionaires or multimillionaires usually because they invest in things that make them money.
Yeah, they want to make a return, of course. Yeah,
exactly. They don't invest in things that lose the money. Doesn't matter how, you know, how into it they are, or how, you know, how much they are into pro wrestling. as a business, this has to deliver financially. So I think when we get to Double or Nothing, it's going to be, I think a lot of announcements will be made in conjunction with that event, certainly regarding the TV show and certainly regarding how regular it's going to be and the schedule of tapings and what have you and things like that. Because in order for All Elite Wrestling to be a player, it can't be putting on like three shows a year, can it? It's got to have a regular schedule. It's got to have TV. It's got to have pay-per-view and all these other things. Yeah. So I think we're going to get announcements in May. And I think at that point, we're going to be really better positioned to make a judgment about what's going to happen next. Or at least a concrete evaluation of where it all goes and what they could achieve. But from what I'm hearing, I think they're going to do all right. I think they're going to do all right.
Yeah, me too. And I guess maybe that will be a good time for us to kind of revisit and maybe come on and speak about Double or Nothing closer to the time, or maybe after the fact, and we can kind of go back and have a chat again on this show and see what happens and what comes of it. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean that's it. I mean, the thing is, I think that in a sense, they don't right now. It's funny when you look at All Elite Wrestling. It's like they're not under pressure. They all seem very relaxed, doesn't it? You see them make appearances.
Yeah.
But the pressure has got to be building because a lot of money has been pumped into this and there's got to be a return.
Oh, for sure.
And also, when you think about it, there's huge expectations as well. So it's kind of got to deliver creatively. And it's all right putting on a few shows a year, but if you're doing a weekly TV program, which I imagine it will be, if you're doing a weekly TV program, that's a lot of pressure to deliver a lot of good content that's delivering ratings. Yeah. So if the TV company is paying All Elite Wrestling for the program, which I imagine they will be, because we know that's where the money comes from now, from TV rights fees. Those are WWE's biggest revenue stream and have been for I think about the last 10 years, or certainly all this decade. TV rights is a huge revenue stream. TV companies are only going to pay that money if they're getting something in return, as we have seen with Impact Wrestling. With them, they had the Spike deal, then they lost Spike, and they've been moving down the trough ever since, and they've been making basically, well, certainly in the States, really no money from TV, and just sort of dribs and drabs from TV companies overseas. Yeah. So if it was that easy, if you could just put a product out, and I think Impact's been pretty damn good TV program over the last year or so.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
It's clearly not delivering the numbers. It's not in a position where it can command a TV contract that's going to pay a lot of money. You look at All Elite Wrestling, do they really have that? I mean, they do have some big stars in Kenny Omega's big star in Japan. How big a star is he in the States, really? And certainly to a mainstream audience. So when you think about it, you've got all these guys, all this talent that are apparently getting paid a lot of money, but they're going to have to deliver ratings in order for the TV company, whichever one it is, the TV channel, to get a return on its investment. So, it's a bit of a conundrum, really, is All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah.
We don't really know. We know a lot. We know some of what's going to happen, but there's still so many questions that haven't been answered. I think that's fair to say. Would you agree?
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly with everything you just said there. 100%. And I think that's the best way to look at it, is just see how it goes. Let's just sit back and, I guess, enjoy the ride and see what happens. I mean, for sure, you and me will definitely hook up again for a podcast maybe closer to Double or Nothing.
I'm all right for another 5 or 10 minutes if you want to talk about something else.
Yeah, that's absolutely cool. I mean, I guess for yourself, what are you kind of looking forward to over the next, I suppose? I mean, we are into WrestleMania season now.
WrestleMania season. Yeah, I mean, it's apart from Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch, which I think they've done a really good job of promoting.
Sure.
I don't know, really. It's, there's a lot of things that I think could be better than they are.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of questions, just like as regards All Elite Wrestling. There's a lot of questions about WrestleMania that, as far as I know right now, haven't been answered. Do we know yet what Roman Reigns is going to do? Has that been answered yet?
We should also, I suppose, today, because it did happen today, I suppose, pay tribute, rest in peace to King Kong Bundy, who died today, actually, age 61. I just said I'd give a quick mention to that. Pretty, uh, pretty sad to hear that.
I mean, definitely. I remember WrestleMania 2, the main event of WrestleMania 2 was like, not the first thing I saw in wrestling, but I remember watching it and just like, wow, look at this guy. This guy's enormous. And Hulk Hogan genuinely looks like he's in peril and he could lose that title.
Yeah.
He was an unusual looking guy, wasn't he?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Perfect for pro wrestling when you think about it.
I'll definitely kind of do an episode, I guess, maybe looking at some of King Kong Bundy's best moments. There weren't like a whole lot of them, I guess, in WWE, but they're definitely like a lot of great nostalgia moments, you know, in terms of that. But yeah,
I mean, you know, he worked in Memphis, he worked down in Texas for the Von Erichs.
Yeah.
You know, been like big opponent of Jerry Lawler in Memphis.
Yeah.
Had a good run there in WWF, came in with the 5-count gimmick, which was some of the people, when I first started watching American Wrestling in '88, people were talking about, oh, Bundy's unstoppable. You know, he wants more than the 3-count. When he pins his opponents, he demands the referee count 5. And like, yeah, you know, crazy. It did seem like, wow, this guy is like, who's going to beat this guy?
Yeah.
So I think they did a really good job promoting him as Hulk Hogan's opponent at WrestleMania 2.
Yeah.
When Hogan going in with the rib injury gimmick. And Bundy's like there, he's injured Hogan. How's Hogan going to beat this guy? And Bundy bleeding. You're like, wow, because you saw blood so infrequently. At least on televised WWF back then.
Yeah.
That was quite something to see. And the old blue bar.
Sorry, we got a bit cut off there. Technical issues, unfortunately, here in Dublin. But no, go back to your question. You mentioned, in case somebody lost it there, you mentioned, do I have any fond memories of the blue bar cage? It was actually my favourite to watch because there were so many great matches in it. I mean, Warrior and Rude stands out. But for me, best was Owen and Bret. SummerSlam 94, that was just an incredible match in the blue bar cage. What about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, the epic Battle of the Hearts, yeah. I mean, I don't know, even though it wasn't a good match, I do have fond memories of Vince versus Austin from St. Valentine's Day Massacre 99.
That was the anniversary only a few weeks ago, yeah.
That's right. I mean, and it really wasn't a good match at all.
No.
But for some reason, because the storyline had been built so well, you know, they've been feuding officially since the night after WrestleMania 14, I guess it would have been. And here we were, what would this have been? 11 months on, and they finally had the match. I finally had their match. So I remember that's something that I remember very fondly.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great kind of... it was very unique looking. I mean, it was kind of cool looking. It was some, as I said, Warrior and Rude was a great match. I mean,
it was. I mean, it just seemed like a really tough match, didn't it?
As well,
Rude taking those bumps into the cage, and Rude really being presented as a, you know, serious challenger to Warrior. And I remember that being a really exciting match at SummerSlam 1990. I was watching by then. I was watching religiously by then.
Yeah.
And I remember really looking forward to getting the, you know, VHS tape of it. A friend of mine would tape shows for me.
Yeah.
I went to get home and watch it, like, you know, like a proper mark.
Oh, man. I mean, we were all the same back in the day.
Of course we were.
Yeah. No, I mean, Rick Rude was just really phenomenal. He really was. Him and Mr. Perfect kind of both cut from the same cloth, even though they kind of hung around together. Just so good at making guys look better than they actually were, you know?
Definitely. I use the M-word there. I think to really appreciate pro wrestling, I think at some point you've got to have been, you know, it's got to have been this huge, perhaps not the most important thing in your life, but I think to really appreciate pro wrestling, you've got to have been a full-on fanboy at some point, and I certainly was.
And well, listen, and shamelessly so.
Of course.
I suppose in finishing up, Finn, just give us a little. I know we mentioned at the start. Give us a little shout out to what you're doing, what you've got coming up, and where people can find some of your content, especially with the books, the e-books.
I said earlier that they're on Amazon, they're on iBooks, they're on Kobo. Yeah. I hope you check them out. It was Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam years, 1994-2014. And the Power Slam Interviews Volume 1 and the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. In the second of the two interviews books, I did like a huge interview with Honky Tonk Man from 2016, about 13,000 word interview. We covered his entire career, so that was tremendous. He did like a, I did a huge interview in there with Daphne. Remember Daphne from Impact and WCW? Yeah. You know, that was really quite a moving interview as well. So yeah, I hope you'll check those books out. As I mentioned earlier as well, WrestleTalk Magazine, issue 8 is out now. You'll find, you can find, if you go to my website, finleymartin.co.uk, yep, there is a link to the WrestleTalk page on there, on the homepage. So that's me. And of course, how can I cannot forget to mention Inside the Ropes, do the Power Slam podcast each week with Kenny McIntosh, which you'll find on Podomatic, Mixcloud, and Spotify. So, yeah, please check that out.
And shout out to Kenny. Kenny is, of course, the host of most of the Inside the Ropes wrestling shows as well. He's obviously been over here quite a bit in Dublin because those shows come over quite often, and there is many more coming up. So I'll definitely happily plug them over the couple of months for himself, which I'm sure he'll be happy about.
Yeah, I'll be catching up with him tomorrow night in Manchester for the Goldust show. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward. Hopefully I'll be interviewing Dustin Runnels this week as well for the Inside the Ropes Patreon section. So I've never interviewed him. He's obviously had a very interesting career dating back over 30 years. Started in the old, you know, the territories were still around when his career started. So I'm looking forward to doing an interview with him.
Awesome, awesome. I can't wait to see how that goes, and send my regards to the guys. And as I say, we'll definitely do this again, and I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, I'd love to come back on again. Yeah, we'll maybe do something around the time of Double or Nothing.
It sounds good to me, Finn. Sounds good to me.
Right, well, thanks very much for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you again someday.
You too, my friend. Take care.
Right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, if you're like me and you're a fan of your wrestling merch and your MMA merch and your boxing merch, there's only one place I go, and that is Wrestling Mania. That's right. Wrestling Mania is located at the top floor of Dublin St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. It's your one-stop shop for all your wrestling, MMA and boxing needs. It's Ireland's only dedicated pro wrestling shop and carries all the latest wrestling, MMA and boxing merch, including brands like WWE and UFC and Ring of Honor, and much, much more. And hey, if they don't have it in there, they can get it. If you don't see what you want and you know something that you do want, well, the guys in the shop can get it in for you. And get this, if you can't make it into the shop, they'll send it to you. That's right, they will actually deliver it to your house. So if you want your wrestling, MMA, or boxing hookup, go to Wrestling Mania, located once again at the top floor of Dublin St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. Go check them out on Facebook. So it's Wrestling Mania on Facebook. You'll be able to drop them a mail. Very responsive, very appreciative, and also very welcoming and accommodating. Wrestling Mania, for all your wrestling, MMA, and boxing needs. Go right now.